Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Girl Talking Mas. I am here with my girl, Ruby.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, you guys. Ruby and I are going to be coming at you a lot these next couple episodes because we have so many episodes for you. But today we have a special episode with an award-winning author. She's absolutely amazing and a San Antonio native. So you guys know we had to, like, you know, give her all the love. Guadalupe Garcia McCall, thank you for joining us today.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, we are so excited. Ruby and I were honored to have a copy of your book sent, and it was just so amazing to start reading it and get it. And I haven't completely finished it, but I am just all in, and I just love, like, the type of books you read, and we're going to get into that. But before we get into, like, you know, your writing career, how you had a really long and successful career. So just tell us kind of, like, about the journey that kind of just started it all. Like, where did you get inspired to, like, I want to start writing these books, I want to be an author? Like, where did that come in your life? Because I know you were just telling us about your family and your kids and your husband and your jobs. And so you have, you know, 10 million things going on like the rest of us. And where did you decide to, like, put your energy into this? Because it was obviously the right thing for you to do. Because it's been so great for you. But, well, tell us about it.
Yeah. So years ago, and I want to say, like, in the 90s, the late 90s, I was teaching a seventh grade. It was seventh graders. And I had a lot of boys who wanted to be NBA players. Back then, NBA players
were
the movie stars, right? Mm-hmm. And so these boys wanted to be that. They were not necessarily interested in my English class. Mm-hmm. They were very respectful, very, very sweet to me, but they didn't do work. They would come in sweaty because they would get off the bus and go play basketball. And then they would come to my class completely sweaty, take all my Kleenex and say, it's hot, it's hot. And I would say, well, of course it's hot. You got off the bus and you played 2 hours. You didn't even go to breakfast. And here you are, you know, expecting it not to be hot.
Right.
And so like I said, they were not really interested in literature. Mm-hmm. And I'm a literature lover. I mean, I love books and I love writing.
I'm the same way.
And so I really wanted them to get engaged with my class. And so somebody had told me that at an in-service that all you had to do was teach one thing you love the way you love it, from your
interesting
heart. From your passion, from your heart, and that the students would pick up on that passion and that love, and that they would buy into it. So I was, like, in this in service for 3 days, and I was laying in bed that night, and I was thinking, what do I love and I thought, I love poetry. Mm-hmm. Like, I live in poetry. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to teach poetry. So I started dreaming up this lesson. I started dreaming up further lessons. And before you know it, by the time the morning came, I have my students in my brain supposedly writing a poem every day on a different literary device. Wow. And by the end, having a beautiful book of poetry that they could dedicate to their you know, families.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Oh, yeah.
That's so awesome.
That's a great idea.
I went in, and you should have seen these boys. They just looked at me like this.
Mm-hmm. What are you talking about?
I listened and I said, and we're going to do this. You're going to have a book and blah, blah, blah. And they said, sola, miss, sola. You're the only one that likes that. And I said, just give me one day, please. Just give me one day. Give me one poem. Go on this journey with me. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, go ahead. Go ahead, teach. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, here's the mentor text. We just went through it, blah, blah, blah. And I went through the lesson very, you know, engaged, very passionate about it. And they still couldn't write. They just sat there and they couldn't write. And I said, what's the problem?
Yeah.
Said, it's hard.
Hard.
And then I thought, it's one simile. Mm-hmm. How hard is that? And I said, it's not hard at all. And then one of them in the back said, If it's not so hard, why don't you do it?
Oh.
And it's that moment. As a teacher, it's that moment that you can step it up, take the challenge, or get upset with them. And I mean, getting upset is not going to lead anywhere. It's just going to escalate the problem.
Of
And
course.
so I started laughing and I made a face and I said, "Challenge. All right. Boys, you are talking to the queen of poetry, the princess of prose." And I started like acting like all like I knew what I was doing.
He's so poetic.
Yes, and they were like, "What?" And I said, "I am going to write you a poem. It's going to be at least six stanzas. Every stanza is going to have a simile or a metaphor because the metaphor is the cousin, but we'll talk about that tomorrow." So I said, "I'm going to do it." So I stood there in front of them and I wrote a poem from my memory. I told them, "You know, I just accessed memory, something that I remember." And then I wrote a poem. So I started like this. I closed my eyes and I said, "It is Sunday, and the sun in the sky is an Aztec god so powerful. You can go blind if you stare too long." And I said, "Did you hear the metaphor?" And they were like, The sun is a god." And I said, "Not just any god, he's an Aztec god, like our ancestors." So I said, "That's a metaphor. It counts. I'm gonna put it on the board." So I wrote a little stanza with that. And then I said, "And I am a bronzed mermaid, weightless and swift, when I pierce the water and jump up." And they were like, "Yeah, that's another metaphor." And I said, "That's right." And so before you know it, I had six stanzas and I had a poem. And they were like, "That's all?" Because I called my father and my brother a tiburón. I said he was a tiburón. He had stolen all the hot dogs out of the icebox and now we had nothing to eat. And they were like, "That's all we have to do? We just write about something that happened to us and we can throw Spanish words?" And I said, "Yes, and put some similes in there." And lo and behold, they sat there and they wrote these beautiful poems about their abuelitas and their moms and their cousins and their tios. And they were walking out and they're handing me these poems, and some of them are trying to finish them and like writing and writing furiously. And I'm standing at the door with all these beautiful poems, and I'm thinking, "Thank God, this worked." And so the next day they come back and they're standing, and now they're not late like they normally are. They came in with their basketball and they're like holding this basketball and playing and bouncing it at the door. And they said, "Miss, what are you going to write about today?" And I said, "Me? I'm not writing. This is your assignment. You're the ones that have to do this poetry book." And they said, "Well, we talked about it. And if we have to do a poetry book, you have to do a poetry book." And I took the challenge. I said, "It is a deal. I write, you write. We create together. We're gonna have a poetry book. Woo-hoo!" So it worked so well. It worked beautifully. And these boys had these beautiful poetry books and they dedicated them to their abuelitas. And one of them I'll never forget had a whole poetry book on all of the poems had to do with pancakes. And it's because he lived with his grandma.
Oh, cute.
And she made him pancakes every morning. So
That is so sweet.
it was his book of poems about pancakes dedicated to his grandma.
Oh my God, that is the cutest thing.
Oh,
I could totally see a
yeah.
book about that, couldn't you?
Yes.
I know.
Like a
And so
kid's book about pancakes?
I know. And
That's a
so
great idea.
so what happened is that book that I wrote that year went in a file. And I did this for 10 years. And then before you know it, one day they said, "You have to run over and be in another part of the school now. You're no longer going to be in this room. We're going to move you." And so I was purging and I took that file and started purging, but I started keeping the poems about my childhood. And before you know it, it's a huge stack of poems about me being a kid on the border. And I was like, I wrote a book. In the last 10 years of teaching my students how to write poetry, in those poetry units, I wrote an entire book.
An entire book,
Wow.
yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I sent out. That's what became Under the Mesquite. And I never looked back. I mean, I never looked back because that taught me, well, first of all, I'm so grateful for those students. They
Yes.
Yeah. changed your life.
They changed my life. They challenged me to walk the walk. If I talk the talk, you walk the walk. And so I became this writer before their very eyes. And so that I owe everything to those boys because they
You know, I wish that at that time, when you were talking about basketball and poetry and stuff, I go back and I think about the poem that Kobe Bryant wrote, Dear Basketball. And it was just so heartwarming. Like, I was just like, oh my God, this is so sweet, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes back and he talks about his love for basketball in, you know, in a poem. And when you were talking about that, God, you know, these kids can, you know, they could have read this and found inspiration as well. But that's awesome. Yeah.
But I'm so glad that you were able, like you said, to open that up, and they were able to find things within their grandparents and their mothers, like you said, and write these beautiful stories. I mean, that is so inspiring. So that was that collection was your first book.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, it was so well received that it kind of like freaked me out a little bit because it was my debut. And out of the gate, I won. I was told that I was a finalist for the Thomas E. Morris Award, which is a huge award.
Yes.
And then I went over there to pick up my finalist certificate and to be in that space. And I find out that I've also won the Purabel Prey.
Yes. I saw that. I'm like, wow. So that was your first book that you won those awards.
Yeah. So I'm telling you, those boys changed my life.
They did. They did.
They made me step up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So did you not teach after that semester or that year? Did you continue teaching or?
Oh, yeah. I'm still teaching now.
Okay.
Yeah. So I finished teaching to be able to retire in Texas. So this went on because that was the 90s. So I retired in Texas in 2018, and then I ran away to Oregon and became an assistant professor of English and literature in Oregon for 4 years. And right now I am officially a visiting professor for Antioch University in Los Angeles and in the program. Yeah. So it's mostly online.
Yes.
I'm still very much a teacher.
So you're still doing the teaching thing, just not in the classroom, that age group, but you're doing your professor in a college. Awesome.
Yeah. I don't have the physically the energy to keep up with eighth grade anymore.
For sure. I don't blame you. I do not.
That takes
blame
a lot.
Yes, it does.
It does. And Guadalupe, your recent book, Echoes of Grace, it's a modern Gothic story about sisterhood, family secrets, intergenerational trauma, but with a magical twist. Can you tell us a little bit more about your inspiration behind writing that novel?
Sure. So it's a little sad because I'm sure you've seen that the book is sad.
It is.
But I want you to remember, Marisa, because you're reading it right now, that I take you to the dark side, but I bring you back to light.
Yes. Yes.
All my books, I will bring you back to light. So stick with it. So what happened is in 2012, there was an incident in my small rural community here in Somerset, Texas. I lived out in the country.
Yeah.
And there was an accident. I didn't know what had happened. I was going to the grocery store, couldn't get through Senior Road. But I backtracked and went to the store. The next day, though, I found out that there was, and this is the only way they described it on the news. They said there was a young woman who was leaving for work. So she left her 2-year-old on the porch with her younger sister. Child kind of se desprendió, got loose from the sister, ran out the parking area, and his mother ran him over. And
oh my God.
And I just was horrified. Horrified by this incident. I want to say I was traumatized by that description of this horrible thing that had happened in our community.
Yeah.
My sons came home that weekend and they asked me, "Mom, did you hear what happened on Senior Road?" And I said, "Honey, can't stop thinking about it.
And
I said, you know, what really upsets me is that here were these young women trying to do the right thing, going to work, taking care of their children, taking care of each other, and they paid this horrible price for being poor, for not having the resources to put that child in a daycare center. Because I'm not blaming anybody here, but that child needed to be in a daycare center. And if there had been government assistance, if there had been social organizations, groups that would help these young women find a space to go to work, go to school, improve themselves without having to sacrifice their child and their families and their each other, then, you know, this tragedy would not have happened. And so I cried a lot. And my children, my second son, who adores me, he says, "Mom, really worried about you, because all you talked about all day is that
incident."
Why are you so upset? And I said, and of course I had done all the ranting about the government not helping. And because those programs are there, but they're underfunded and understaffed.
Yes, definitely.
And so that's where my anger was coming from. And so that's why I was ranting. But I said, you know, honey, that was me. I went to college with my sister. She had a 2-year-old. I had a 3-year-old. And we did what we had to do to help each other so that we could get through university and change our stars.
That's exactly how it was with me too. It was me and my best friend babysat for me, and I had to go through the state, because at that time I was in Michigan, and I had to go through the state to get the money to pay her to watch my daughter so I could go to work to pay, you know, I mean, same thing. Like I had to use that assistance at that time because I was never going to make it.
Right. Yeah, and sometimes that assistance is so minimal that you end
minimal.
That you end up having to do other things. I remember my sister and I having to put both our babies in one stroller and walk from 10th Street in the snow all the way to the university with the babies covered up with a blanket, with a colcha. And then we would sit on the student center and feed them French fries from the little stand.
The cafeteria.
And so concession stand. And then she would go to class, I would go to class, and my husband would go to class, and then we'd switch and come back, and whose turn is it? And it was crazy between the three of us. And there were three of us and two children, but it still felt like a lot.
Heavy. Very heavy.
Yeah. And so I told my son, what really angers me about the whole thing is that I see that nothing has changed. In 20 years, nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that was 10 years ago. So we're looking at it now, and it's not changed. Mm-mm. And so to me, this book was important for me to tell this story about neglect, abuse, the horrible, traumatizing experiences that our community has to experience and to live through when we have been marginalized like this.
Yes.
And so it speaks to marginalization, it speaks to social injustice, and so it speaks to generational trauma, because every time this kind of thing happens a lot.
Yes, it does. In our community, to our very own primas, primos, cousins, aunts, uncles, we all know somebody that is having a hard, you know, like, think about it. Like, we all know somebody close to us that is going through this. And you're right, so a lot of it's generational trauma. And it's, you know, kind of integrated with us. Like, a lot of your money problems come from the money problems that your parents had, you know, like, you fear that, you know, like, you know what I mean, right, Guadalupe?
Yeah. No, and so when I was writing the book, I have a previous time, 3 years before, and then the present, back and forth and back and forth. And then you have the abuelita stories on both sides. The abuelitas tell the story. And then the main character is trying to find out the secret of the story of her mother's death. And so it's all about these secrets that are in our community, right? And I'm not just talking about anymore about just the border women and Hispanics, women in general.
In general,
we have generational trauma.
Yeah,
we have
you do.
all lived through this patriarchy where we are, you know, oppressed. We don't have the resources. We have to take care of our families. We are made responsible for our children with no resources. And so that generational trauma continues to mirror itself and echo itself over and over again in the next generation. It's no matter how well we are doing, we can feel the echoes of all that trauma from our abuelitas, from our mother, from our tías, from the women in our community. I mean, I was revising this book when Gabby Petito went missing.
I just watched that story on Lifetime, and I'm still like, oh, they did a Lifetime movie about her, and I'm just like, oh my gosh.
And so I was watching glued to the television, hoping they would find her, hoping that that boy had not hurt her. And I just kept thinking, this is what this book speaks to.
Yes.
The abuse, the neglect, the lack of resources that women have to get away from their abuse. The secrets. Because, I mean, come on. They asked that mother and that father, where's our daughter? And there was all this secrecy.
Yeah.
All this.
And they were hiding the son, and it's like, you know, that was just, and you're right. She didn't, I noticed in watching that movie, just to summarize that for a little bit for everybody, he played so many mind games with her. He was such a narcissist, and he played so many mind games with her, and she was really trying to be nice about things and really trying to just enjoy her life. And he really had a controlling, obsessive thing about her that her best friend saw, that her mom kind of noticed, but they also wanted to let her do what she wanted to do. But look what ended up happening. You know, he ended up snapping and she's gone.
Right. In a heartbeat, right? And like from one day to the next, and then to show up, the girl to show up in the truck and not say what happened to her. And so to me, it was more of the same of this disposability of human beings, how 50% of the population is disposable to the other 50%. And I'm not saying all men are evil, but there has been too much of that and too much burying. I think of a burying of secrets and putting things under the carpet and always questioning victims and making victims feel like they've done something to deserve this. And so the book speaks to all that. It speaks to it marginalization. It speaks to oppression. It speaks to disempowerment of women. And so it really is a feminist book, a gothic, a true gothic story, because that's what gothic books were. When they first started out, they were feminist books. And that's what I was trying to recreate with this.
I can't wait to read it.
You're gonna love
to
it.
Read it. Yeah.
It is, like I said, it brings you down, but like I'm holding on to that part where it brings me back at the end. So I can I'm gonna finish it this week. I have a few days off after this, and I'm gonna totally be reading.
Don't spoil it for me.
I won't.
Well, it also speaks, you know, and I'll tell you where the light comes from. It speaks to love. It speaks to the love of sisters. Because that was the other thing that really, really inspired me to write the book. Because I kept thinking, how many times did I take my nephew's life in my hands?
For your sister.
And
how you know that, Ruby. You and Sophie are always. Sophie, her sister Sophie, is very close to her. She's... And they take care of each other's kids and each other and everything. I mean, they're both, you know. On that, so I know exactly what you mean.
Y nosotros somos, you know, border girls. And so my sister would really, like, grab my neck. Estaba bien flaquita, all skinny, right? Like, with a little skinny arm. She put a skinny arm around my neck, and she would kiss me hard. And then she would say, take care of him. Take care of him, Lupe. Because if something happens to him, I'm gonna gut you like a fish.
Mm-hmm.
She said, like those frogs on lab class. And I was like, thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
You know, visual there.
Watching him extra close.
Fair warning. Yeah, fair warning.
Yeah, but it was that fear. I could see that what was behind that was that fear that she was leaving the most precious thing in the world to her.
Oh, but I felt that when I would leave my daughter with my best friend. I mean, she was my best friend from when we were kids, and I trusted her and her mom and her dad with my life. And that's who would watch my little Mariah when
Your
I would have
daughter.
To go to work. And I would, you know, and I would leave them with her, leave her with them. And sometimes it was like I had to go to work at, you know, 6 in the morning, or my hours were always crazy and different. Sometimes I was there until 6 o'clock in that night, and they had her for 12 hours. And I'll be like, oh my gosh. And I used to get so nervous. They'd be like, oh, we're going to take her to the store with us. And I'm like, oh my gosh, please watch her. Please make sure, you know, like I'd freak out. And so I know like that panicky feeling, but I also knew, like, you know, like my best friend was going to take care of her. Like,
They're going to, exactly.
Yeah. And I kept thinking, okay, so had something happened, right? Mm-hmm. And how would I ever make it up to her?
Yeah.
How could I ever reconcile that within myself, much less with her?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the other part of this novel that really was driving this narrative. How do you come back from a tragedy that destroys another person's life or a person that you love?
Yeah.
And so how do you come back from that? And so it was an exploration of familial love, an exploration of sisterhood, and an exploration of women and how we have come to that, to understand each other in a way that we are there for each other. We support each other 150%.
We do. Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it takes.
Yes. And it's a beautiful book, you guys. I am going to urge you to go to your Amazon, your bookstore. It's everywhere. Echoes of Grace. Make sure you
Echoes
read that
of
book.
Grace.
Yes. Make sure you read that. But I wanted to talk to you about some of your other books. I saw your long list of books that you have written in your career. And a lot of them are magical realism. I feel like that might be something that you're kind of fascinated with, that you enjoy writing about. Tell us what inspires you to write like these books in the magical realism. And have you ever thought about any of your books like becoming like a movie or a short film or anything like that? Like if you could pick one, like what would you pick? Like I feel like I was reading some of your other books and like the synopsis and everything. And I was like, wow, this one sounds really good. And oh, I could see this one in this. And I was like, you know, so I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I got to ask her. Cause I'm like, I'm thinking I need to see a movie and like at least 3 of these books already.
Well, I'm going to answer the movie question first. Okay. I would love to see them all, but especially Summer of the Mariposas, because that is like magical and fantasy, but it also has all the cuckoos from our you know, tradition, our culture. Yeah. And so I would love to see that made into like a Netflix series.
I need to tag Netflix when I post this and tell them. But that's what I love. I love that you take the magical realism and the culture and it's like together.
Combine them.
It's like a whole new way of looking at it. Cause I don't think I ever had, I was reading, you know, your books and everything that you write about. I was like, I am connecting with it more because of the way you write it. Cause you're my cultura. You're like, you know, like you're my gente. So it's like, I feel like more connected to it than just an average book in that category. So that's the special thing is that you bring those two things together. How did you get there?
Okay, so I mean, and you are going to resonate with this because you're both like me.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, my mom would put us to bed con la ponte a dormir because the Llorona is coming. And look, do you see that lechuza? She's watching you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there would be an owl in the tree and she'd be like, mira, la lechuza te está viendo. And so the lechuza, the cuckoo, la mano pachona, all these horror stories.
Yeah.
I used to think, why does she scare us, right?
Why is she scaring us?
I know. How am I supposed to go to sleep now?
Way to send us to bed, huh?
Right.
And so I remember one day I questioned my mother. I said, wait a minute. I don't believe that story. And it was the story of the Llorona. And she said, what do you mean you don't believe? Are you calling me a liar? And I said, no, I'm not saying you're a liar. I just think you got the story wrong. I said, think about it. Why would a mom kill her kids?
Yeah, drown the kids.
I said, you told us that moms are for love. Mommies are for love. And you've always said that. And you, I know you love us. Would you ever kill us? And she said, of course not. Oh. I would never. And I said, exactly. I think something else went on. I think something else happened that night. And she just said, ay, Guadalupe, I don't know what to do with you. Go to sleep.
You're like, that's not what happened. Something else happened.
Yes. Yeah. And so.
You were her curious child.
Yes, I was. Well, I was a storyteller. And yes, I had heard. And she was a storyteller, and my father was like a major storyteller. And so I questioned character motivation, plot points, you know. And so it was an interesting time, but I just grew up questioning all those things, but also being scared of them.
Good for you.
You know, and also being skeptical. And, you know, that's whole speculative fiction genre. That's what we are. That's what we do. We question the supernatural, the things we don't understand, the things that have been passed on to us from generation to generation.
Yeah, like, how am I supposed to just believe that? Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. And I think even more now, the generation now, I feel like even more questions that. I feel like my daughter questions things all the time.
Right. I'm sure and she does. But we question everything. And then what we cannot explain, we have to concede. That maybe there's something there we don't understand, right? Maybe there's something in the universe that nobody has been able to explain because it is a secret the universe is keeping from us. So this whole magic, you know, and a lot of people question also the afterlife. Well, I question it too, because somebody asked me one time, why do you believe in the afterlife? Because I can feel the energy that I carry within myself. And I choose to believe that there is something greater that exists on the other side. That this cannot possibly be the end of me at that moment.
Yeah.
And I choose to believe that about my mom. I have had too many things happen to me.
Yes.
Where I feel her energy.
Yes.
In the room.
That's how I am with my grandmother. Like, I can't feel it like all the time, but I have felt my grandmother more than once with me. And I just don't know if it's just my, like I said, it's the energy. I don't know if she's I don't know if she's thinking about me wherever she is in heaven with God, you know, like she's thinking of me, but there's some type of energy, some type of connection that she sends to me that I know for a fact.
You just
her.
Feel it. You right. know it's her. Yeah.
Yeah. And so because I've had those experiences, and I've had many dreams where my mother comes and warns me of things, then they happen. And I'm like, okay. So how do I explain that? That I had the dream. I woke up and told my husband, and he said, never happened. And then later it happens. And then
it happens.
Goes, okay,
it
happens. I don't get it. But you know.
Yeah.
And so, and my sister has had the same experience. My sister, Virginia, who, by the way, is very much inspiration for Mercy. My sister Virginia, Alicia, and Demantina are inspiration for Mercy. All three of them put together is Mercy.
Oh, wow.
So how many sisters do you have, Guadalupe?
I have five sisters.
Five sisters.
And two brothers. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. Big family.
Like you, Ruby.
Yeah, well, it's four. Yeah, I have two sisters and a brother. So it's four of
five,
us. Yeah.
Five, yeah.
Four.
Four? Two sisters?
Four, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Two sisters and a brother, and then me.
Yeah, so
but you're my sister too, Marissa, don't worry.
We are.
So that's why in Summer of the Mariposas you see five sisters together forever.
I love it.
No matter what.
That's the one I want to read, that one next. That was the one that drew me in when I was looking over everything that you have done. That was I mean, do you have a favorite, Guadalupe? I know it's probably hard, but do you have a favorite?
I have to tell you what I tell students when I go visit schools. Yeah. They're all my favorites for different reasons.
Yes.
It's like asking,
yes.
Because they're all my babies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you love all your children for different reasons and in different ways. And it's not one of them is your favorite. They're all your favorite.
Yeah,
they're
all, yeah. You sound like my mom, because sometimes my little sister fights, I'm the favorite. And we're like, no, I'm the favorite. My mom's like, no, I love you guys all the same. It's just a different love because of your personalities, of the way you guys are. But the love level is the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to tell my son, it's not that I love him more, is that right now, right now, he needs more love.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Oh, right now. Nice. I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, like if one of them was having a harder time, well, I would, you know, be more, I don't know, just closer, more attentive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the others would get a little jealous. Why does he get to do that? But that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, and I have to tell you that when I'm writing the book, when I'm in the process of writing book, I'm the most in love with the book I'm ever going to be. So
I can totally see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So right now I'm writing a very super secret special project, and that I can't even talk about yet.
Wow.
Ooh. But
please call us when it comes out so we can talk to you about it. As soon as it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in love with it. And I'm on page, yesterday I hit 101 on the pages, and I was like, yes.
Congrats. Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
So back to movies, though, the one that I really also would love to see an actual movie, like a flesh film, would be Shame the Stars, because Shame the Stars is about a time in our history here on the border, where Mexicans were not just marginalized and oppressed and, you know, persecuted,
mm-hmm.
but they were being lynched. Like, there would be these roundups in the summer of 1915, where the Texas Rangers, along with the military, the cavalry, would go into homes, into ranchos, and gather all the men and say, well, we hear you're with the insurrection, you're with the people that are causing all our troubles. So they would just hang them. No taking anyone to court, no jury of their peers, no judgment. Right there, they were the law, they were the judges, they were the court system. And so they would take 20 people out of there and go hang everybody by some mesquite trees. And then they would tell the wife,
oh gosh,
you need to sell your property and go back to Mexico.
Wow.
And that's how a lot of land passed hands into the people that were coming in to buy our land and trying to, because they, you know, they had the ferrocarril, the trains were coming in, and there was a lot of good land to farm. And so there was advertisements that there was good opportunities in Texas. Come down and become a farmer, become a rancher. There's great opportunities. And so these people were coming in, immigrating into Texas. These white people were coming in thinking, well, what happened? There's a bunch of Mexicans here. Mm-hmm. They own the land. And so there was impetus for people to be seen as rebels, to be seen as people that were helping the Mexican Revolution, people who were trying to, you know, dethrone and take away Texas again and take it back to Mexico. And so there was a lot of that. And so it was very easy for somebody to say, well, Juanito over there will not sell me his land, so I think I'm going to go talk to the Texas Rangers, because I think he's with the with the other
and you're
side.
Right, this story has not been told, so that would be an amazing story
and
to share.
So my book Shame the Stars is the first novel to ever address that with YA characters. And when I was writing it, the mother character, I always, she's bien, you know, she's brave and she's fearless, and she writes a horse, and she, you know, she's a she's an insurgent. She's an insurgent in disguise. Like, she looks all sweet, and then you find out halfway through the novel that she's like a rebel. And so I always saw Selma Hayek in that part. When I was writing it, I was like, my Selma Hayek could take this part.
Yes, there you go. I love that. Put that out into the universe. Let's put that out into the universe.
And so when I was writing it, I was seeing it in my head like a movie.
Like a movie.
All the scenes, all the things that happened, because it's very action-packed. And it's very, you know, there's a lot of conflict with the insurrection and the, like I said, the lynchings and all that.
Yeah.
So it's not just politics. There's a lot of action. So I always saw it as a like a historical romance.
Yeah.
We need that movie too.
We do. We do. We do.
We do.
We're ready to do.
Absolutely. The titles of your books, they're all so interesting. How do you come up with those? Mm-hmm. So curious.
It's so funny because they just come out of the writing itself. Like when I was writing Under the Mesquite, well, she was writing poems under the mesquite. And so when it came time to think about it, I was like, poems from under the mesquite. That's what this book is. And so,
Got it.
Then they cut the top, the front of it, and it just became Under the Mesquite. And then the girl, the narrator, starts in the prologue, and she's talking and explaining what has happened in her family. And she says that her father's been missing for a year. He just left and hasn't been back. And so they wonder where he is. And the mothers had to go and, you know, get a job and, so that she could support her family because he's not sending any money. And so it says that summer, the summer of the mariposas, because there's a whole slew. I don't know if you remember, but like in this summer, it happened again, like in late September, where all the American snout butterflies,
they travel.
And they migrate over. And so she says that summer, the summer of the mariposas, my mother went out and got a first job. And then I thought, there's my title, Summer of the Mariposas.
I love that.
Yes, I love that. So nice, so interesting, very poetic. I'm like, I wonder how she comes up with the actual titles, like, you know.
Echoes of Grace is like she calls those, she has visions, right? And so she calls the visions, by the way, the echoes are like metaphorical. They mean something in the novel.
Yeah.
And so the visions that she has, well, they belong to her. So I thought, well, they're echoes of grace. They're hers, but they're also, it's almost like metaphorical too, because it means that we have within ourselves the capacity to give grace to each other. And even when it's hard, even when our relationships are hard and things are really difficult and you're trying to forgive, but you just don't know if you can, there are echoes of grace in our lives. We have it in us. We just have to listen to those echoes that are there and give grace to each other. And that's how we're going to get through the difficult times.
Yeah.
Wow.
For sure.
And we know that you've had many speaking engagements and have spoken on panels as it relates to our culture. What is some knowledge or some advice that you can give to the new generation on the importance of representing our culture?
I think it's so important for us to gather together. Yes. Con mariposas. Warm. The world together, fly together, go in the same direction, because that's how we're going to make a difference, you know. It's not fighting amongst ours. Not fighting with your prima, or you know, chismes and all that. We don't need any of that. We need to
unite,
unify
Como mariposas. I mean, watch the mariposas. What do they do? How do they get through that long journey?
Yes. I've experienced it when I was in Texas.
I've seen it too.
Yeah, out in the country.
I noticed it when it just happened a few months ago. My daughter was like, look, Mom, it's the time for the butterflies. Yeah.
Yes, it's so pretty and it's just so magical. And I remember we went to the border one time. My parents love going to the casino. So we go to, was it Laredo or something like that? The Kickapoo Casino, and we were driving, and all these butterflies, and it was my first time seeing that, and I saw, like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. Yeah. Like, they're all just migrating, and I hated that the car kept killing them, and I told my dad, like, this is so sad.
Yes.
You want to go like a vuelta de ruedas, right? Like,
yes, because I don't want to kill the poor butterflies, you know? But it's just such a beautiful experience. It really is.
Yeah, we can learn. That's, you know, people ask me why there's so much nature in my poem, in my book.
There is a lot of nature.
There is.
And the reason is because we can learn so much from the natural world. It is
the
almost
connection.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like it's almost like it is always giving us the answers. It is always showing us how to be successful. And so I look at things like that, and I look at those butterflies, and I think they're swarming together. They do not take off
life
on their
moving.
Own. Yeah, so they help each other. They migrate together. And when it's time for them to stop, they stop. When it's time for them to eat and rest, they eat and rest. And so that whole concept of gathering together and saying, okay, we're going to try and change the tide.
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of hate speak. We had a lot of, we have a lot of horrible depictions of our community. But what if we all swarmed together? What if we all built a beautiful display for the world to see?
Wow.
And to learn from us what it is to help each other.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And to stay connected. Oh,
that
I just.
So beautifully said. I just think that you're very special. You have a very special energy. I can feel it.
Me too.
I can really feel it. Like,
she
I'm just in like
she
awe
has me
right
so
now.
Calm. Yeah,
she has me so
the way
calm.
She speaks.
And I was just like, wow. Like, I mean, and I was just thinking, like, I really love that your books are for young adults. If you guys, I mean, if you want to gift somebody a book for the Christmas, pick up one of Guadalupe's books, because it's for young adults and it's cultural and it's beautiful and they tell a story. Feel confident that your books are written for our young adults and, you know, people like my daughter that I'm definitely going to give her your books to read, because I think
I love it.
Yeah, I just think that's so special. And you're very special, Guadalupe. We are very lucky to talk to you. And, we're excited for your new project. So please tell us about it, like when you can, when it comes out. But for now, tell all our followers where they can follow you. If you have any social media that you connect on, if they want to connect with you and ever ask you any questions, I'm sure a lot of them are going to run and read Echoes of Grace right now. So tell us where they can connect with you and find your books.
Great. Okay. So before I do that, can I say that I do have two more books coming out next year?
Yes, of course. Tell us.
Okay. So I have a book with David Bowles, who is from the RGB. Oh, and so he and I wrote a fantasy historical that kind of reinvents the future for us as Hispanics. So it is called The Secret of the Moon Conch. And the main protagonist is an immigrant girl who finds a conch on the last day before she leaves to the United States to try and find her father and get away from this guy who wants to get with her, who is a gang leader. So she's trying to run away, and she finds this conch, and she believes it's special. And so she takes it with her on the journey. And the male protagonist, because it's a romance, it's a YA romance, fantasy romance, he is 500 years in the past, an Aztec warrior during the fall of Tenochtitlan, and he threw the conch in the ocean and found it, and they connect and can talk and hear each other. And as the moon changes, the secret is that they can see more and more of each other until they can touch.
Wow. I need this in a movie too.
I know. And so the whole time she's fleeing to the United States, he's fleeing from the conquistadores. And so they help each other on this. And like, she does a lot of research for him about what happened in his time to try and get him out of Tenochtitlan.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Mm. So that's my next one. And then he and I put another one based on, and that one's Moon Conch is coming in May of 2023.
Okay.
And then in May of 2024 is another one called Hearts of Fire and Snow, based on the two volcanoes from Mexico, Popo and Itza, the warrior who carried his girlfriend and laid her down so that she, trying to resurrect her, and then the gods turned him into mountains.
And I think I've seen that on blankets, that image.
Yes,
I've seen
image.
It.
I know the image. I know the image.
We are telling that it's a reincarnation.
On blankets. On the Mexican blankets.
Yes. You know, we need those warm blankets.
Right.
Or the Aztec the calendar, the Aztec calendar, yeah, and stuff.
Yeah, that image. I think we had an image like that in our house somewhere. I was like, I want to say in my
very
house.
Famous.
And I was little, yeah, yeah. The very famous. So you kind of brought that story to life.
To this time.
Present time, yeah.
Yeah. So those two figures and everybody that was involved in her death and that tragedy is also reincarnated in Reno, Nevada, in the present, where there's two mountains. And so it's a wonderful fantasy, romance, political, yeah. You know, and these two characters, of course, because they were, you know, he was a general and she was a princess, in the present, they are wealthy. They are very wealthy. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing we wanted to do. We wanted to show Hispanics in something other than the immigrant story or poverty or exactly. marginalization. We wanted to show Hispanics, Mexicanos, on top of the
food. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we're excited for those two books.
I'm so excited. Yeah, if you come out to LA, let me know.
Oh, yes.
I will go.
I'm going to be an ally. So now for my plug-in, I'm going to be an ally on... A-L-A-N. I'm going to be there. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have a panel about Echoes of Grief.
Okay. I'm going.
Yeah, and I'll read amazing. A little bit from it.
Yes. I have the book. I'm going to read it and I'll go.
Great. So you can find me on Twitter as at Gigi McCall. Mm-hmm. On Facebook, my full name, Guadalupe Garcia McCall. Mm-hmm. And then I have a website at gigimccall.com. And there is a contact me page. If you feel like you absolutely have to tell me something, you can use the contact page.
Oh, wonderful.
Love it.
Oh my gosh. Well, we definitely cannot wait to share this interview and all your books with our audience. But we just want to thank you for like taking the time. Cause like I said, we can feel the amazing energy. And I think your knowledge and your thoughts of how you bring everything together, beautifully written in your books, but you even when speaking to you, you just say it so correctly and beautifully that very lucky. We're very lucky that you're part of Girl Talking Mouse tribe now.
Yes.
Well, I was so flattered that you asked me, and then to know that you were right here in the same place, I was excited.
Yes. Aww. And whenever you do anything here in San Antonio, please let me know. I would love to share it with the rest of my audience and get people out there to come. And if I have anything planned, because I always do events, I will definitely reach out to you. Maybe you can come and be a guest, or we'll do something together.
Great. I do have one coming up November 4th. I'm going to be at the Latino Bookstore. Okay. For the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center, if anybody wants to come.
Oh, okay. There you go, Marissa.
I'll be there. I will be
You're
there.
Booked and, November 4th.
Yes, November 4th, I'm booked. I was like, wait a minute, I don't have anything going on November 4th.
I would love to have some of your audience members come see us. I'm going to be talking about and signing books for Echoes of Grace, November 4th.
I will be there. I would love to come and meet you, so I will definitely be there. That's great. Amazing. Oh, well, thank you so much, Guadalupe. And you guys, thank you for listening to this episode of Girl Talking Mas. We will be back with you soon. Don't forget, we have new episodes every Friday. And you guys can now find us on the Latina Podcasters Network. We are part of Latina Podcasters Network that is on Apple. And we are just so honored. So thank you guys for the love and everything. And we will see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye guys.